Coming to you live from the This Week's Apocalypse safe house, which is very hard to say. It's This Week's Apocalypse. I am your co-host, Kevin Lennon. With me, as always, is my wonderful co-host and probably not the mole, John.
Nope.
John?
Yes.
Are you the mole?
No, although I'd say no anyway.
You'd be a pretty fucking terrible mole if you were to say, I, mate, I'm the mole.
Oh, mate, you have to tell us if you're a mole.
Did you not know that? Oh, it's illegal. If you don't tell me you're the mole and then you sell secrets, that's a crime. Yeah, I know. Of course it's a crime. Yes, so we're secret. Of course, we've been spies all along, John.
True.
Haven't we?
Well, that's the whole point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone's a spy.
Everyone's a spy, or no one is, or whatever. That's... No. That just means no one, I'm trying to filter this through the Incredibles, but it's not quite working. So anyway, John, there's a mole in the organization.
Yep.
Oh my God. Can you believe it?
We've been sitting in the lobby with our newspapers with the eye holes cut out. And
yeah, I think that the fact that we're sitting there reading newspapers at all in 2022 is a little bit suspicious to begin with. So I feel like maybe that's one of the many flaws in our system.
The reception is going, yeah, just sit beside those two spies there and we'll be with you shortly.
What spies? Oh, the guys reading the newspapers with the eye holes cut in. They're wearing trench coats and big black fedoras. You know, those guys.
Sorry, madam. What's a newspaper?
Oh, it's like a website, but for old people.
It's like Twitter, only physical.
It's like, oh no, it's not even like Twitter.
Might as well be.
No, Twitter's just a horrible fight in a pub. That's the real world equivalent of Twitter. Some poorly educated person with quote unquote opinions screaming at you across a bar. That's what Twitter is. Oh gosh. But anyway, John, we need to figure out how to root out a mole. We need to figure out some way to lure them out.
Yeah.
And catch them.
And all the James Bond movies we watched didn't help. Because he comes in and goes, hello, I'm James Bond. Oh, yeah, from like MI6. Yep.
Yeah. Like, it turned out that was not a good tactic.
No.
Announcing that you are a secret agent and saying your very real name to everybody in the room was very, very foolish.
Hello, so 007 here.
What sounds like a weird sort of spy designation? Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it means murder people.
Like, I have this license, I can kill you right now.
Aye. So instead of doing that, John, instead of just showing up, announcing ourselves, and then murdering everybody, which in the real world isn't practical,
yeah,
we have three other movies here about that wonderful word, espionage.
Ooh.
John, espionage. Yeah, they're all thematically about rooting out moles in one way or another.
Yes.
Or about moles, or about doing that kind of thing. So, John, first up, we have The Lives of Others from 2006, directed by Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I'm not going to try to say that name.
Too late. I already said it, so it's mine. So the log line for that. In 1984, East Berlin, an agent of the secret police conducting surveillance on a writer and his lover finds himself becoming increasingly absorbed by their lives. Ooh. That's Cold War intrigue there.
Fun times.
Next up, we have from 1996, Mission Impossible, directed by Brian De Palma. An American agent under false suspicion of disloyalty must discover and expose the real spy without the help of his organization.
You've been disavowed. Ooh.
Yeah, ooh. Simple, to the point, straight up.
Yeah.
No mucking around in that description. Yeah. And then from 2011... we have Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, directed by the pretty great Thomas Alfredson, I'm going to say. Yeah. This guy's got a history of pretty goddamn good movies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the bleak days of the Cold War, espionage veteran George Smiley is forced from semi-retirement to uncover a Soviet agent within MI6. Ooh. I've never been clear on the difference, John, between MI6 and MI5. Is it like a CIA NSA thing? Is one like domestic and one foreign?
I did look it up before, and like MI6 is like It's basically the super secret one.
Okay, well, you know what? Maybe we'll learn more when we watch. Like, so this one's more secret than the other.
Well, MI5 is just the security service, and then MI6, I think, is like more
antagonistic. Covert.
Antagonistic.
They're more antagonistic, maybe.
They're the secret intelligence services.
Okay, all right. So maybe we'll learn more when we sit down and watch these movies, so let's go. Yeah. All right, John. Well, I'm definitely not the mole.
That's exactly what a mole would say.
And you told me you weren't the mole, which is exactly what a mole would say. Mm-hmm. Which is a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Well, I mean, what's a good way? Do we bug everybody's houses? Is that a good way? Because that seems like a lot of manpower. And who do we put on it? How do we know that the person that we put on the bugging duty isn't themselves a mole?
Well, you pick someone who just seems very loyal. At some point, you do have to, use a bit of judgment. And you pick someone who's clearly a believer in that sense.
Someone who's just like, this guy could never be the guy because of all the things he's done.
Because he has no emotions.
It says he's an emotionless husk. Just like our main character in Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck's... I've done that twice now.
Yeah, really well done.
The Lives of Others from 2006. That man's name is so long. That man's name is so long.
I made a cup of tea while you were saying that.
It's so long. But... he knows how to make a movie. John, what did you think of The Lives of Others?
I love this movie. I've seen it. I seen it when it came out on DVD, actually, because I was working in a DVD shop at the time, and they were really trying to push it. And I was going, you know what? Because we both have done this when we worked in record stores and stuff where your wages...
that we both worked in that you were working at the time? Yeah, okay.
And it's like when your wages came in, they just disappeared because you had all this... Like you had we all had the box with our names on it under the counter.
They gave you like a 30% discount on everything, and that was bad for me.
So we were all malnourished, and we all subsided on pot noodles and
mostly
beans.
I had a lot of beans and beans and toast at one point.
Oh,
I
you could afford toast.
Ooh. I know, sometimes every other week it was toast. Sometimes it was like just a bowl of like Tesco's like 40p pasta with some pesto mixed into it, and you were actually kind of getting all of your vitamins and minerals out of that. But it's not a really great way to live.
No.
But
we may have been malnourished that way, but we were, we were very well entertained.
We were culturally, we were very nourished.
Yeah, exactly.
Physically, we were terrible, ill husks most of the time. we've no one to blame but ourselves, John.
Yeah.
If anyone had been bugging us the way they were bugging people in this movie, they wouldn't have had very, very much to entertain themselves.
No.
But goddamn, this movie's great.
Yeah.
It's a real, I don't want to say it's a slow burn as such, but
it's
an emotional build. Yeah. It's consistently very interesting all the way through. It's fascinating, and it's kind of miserable in a lot of ways. I mean, it mainly concerns the East German Stasi, which was basically the GDR police.
Which, I mean,
service.
I don't care what movie you make, if it's about that, it's gonna be pretty grim, no matter what.
They were the Communist Party controlled enforcement agency in East Germany.
Yeah.
So they were very much that sort of Soviet era attitude of spying on everybody, and it's all about like philosophical betrayal, and like this person's not ideology doesn't fit, so they are a criminal, and like that's kind of like it's such a nebulous thing.
Oh, yeah.
To say that, but that's how they're victimizing people, and it's really messed up. So they're almost like saying like this person has bad ideas,
and it shows you a lot of it is like they target a lot of artists, a lot of writers and composers and things like that because it is like they're too kind of free thinking in a way.
Yeah.
And I like that it's, I was about to say touches on it, it like heavily goes into actually the corruption at the top just being,
oh yeah,
like all about personal gain. And
yeah, like the whole thing is really predicated on the sort of desires of this culture minister.
Yeah.
You know,
is absolutely horrible. Like the guy who plays him is so good because you hate him within seconds of meeting him.
Yep. He's so effectively just like the first time anyone has a conversation with him. In fact, I kind of hate everybody. I mean, you're supposed to like all the Stasi.
All
people
the Stasi are terrible.
Awful. Yeah. There's a couple of wee like sort of Norberts who work there who you're kind of like, oh, I can see this guy's just doing the job. And maybe he doesn't fully, he's not necessarily dedicated ideologically to the thing, but he's there and he's doing it.
Yeah.
Like the wee guys that he has helping him, and there's a couple of people, there's one particular guy who
makes a ill-informed joke at the time.
Ill-advised joke, sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, he makes a joke about the party chairman in the presence of someone who's a superior, and it does not go well for him.
No.
Yeah.
Even the way that plays out, like, you know,
It's
a wonderful the kind of way they have, I forget what you call the main character's friend there, but he's quite high up, but he's clearly, he's riding the coattails of everyone. Like every conversation he has with a superior, he mimics exactly what they say when he talks to someone else. And he's just so pathetic in that way that he, like even where, I think near the start when, they're talking about this writer who becomes the focus of the investigation, and our main character in it is kind of saying, I would watch him.
Weissler, I think is his name. Yeah.
I would give him, I would put him under full surveillance, and his friends are just like, oh, don't be ridiculous. He's one of the good ones. And then when he talks to the minister.
He's talking to the horrible minister. He fucking acts like it was his idea.
Yeah, and it's scumbag. You're just like, oh, this guy's so pathetic, and he's just one of those climbers. He's just he just wants nothing more than to climb this corporate ladder, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that like in that scene with the guy who just makes the joke, that you don't really. You can't believe what comes out of that guy's mouth, that he kind of acts like, no, it's fine, I have another joke, and he tells
him
this.
It's the fact that the guy, he makes the guy tell the joke, and it's this real, like, it's like it starts out like one of those scenes in a Tarantino movie, where somebody says something, and everything gets weird, and somebody starts, like, laughing and smiling at someone, and you're like, someone's about to die.
Yeah.
But because this is sort of a lot more grounded than a Tarantino movie, that's not what happens.
just a little.
Yeah, you get the same feeling in the pit of your stomach of, oh no, this is about to go really rotten. But in a Tarantino movie, someone would pull out a gun and start shooting someone at some point. But it would still be somewhat of a surprise, even though you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
But in this, it's like, he turns and you think, oh, he's playing, he was just messing with him. Mm. And then you're like,
was he?
Oh, but was he though?
Was he?
And that goes on for the whole film. Yeah. Anytime anybody says anything to anyone like that, you're like, are they serious? Or are they being sarcastic? Or are they pretending to be serious?
Yeah.
And really they mean this person is screwed? It's just constant. And it's like, it really gives you that feeling of like, this is what it maybe would have felt like living there.
Yeah. It has that really oppressive atmosphere throughout. Where like things, because we know more than the targets of the because we're very much following the captain Weissler, who is the one spying on them.
Yeah.
And so we have more information than them. So like things are happening, you're like, oh no, oh no, because you're very much rooting for them, of course, because they're nice people who are, well, for the most part, like, one of the few problems I have with this movie is that I do find that Weissler's kind of switch, like, his kind of change in ideology, in a way, happens a bit too quick.
Yeah.
But I kind of think they wanted that just to kind of, they needed to get him to that point, and the movie's more about, like, I can forgive it in that sense, that it's more about him dealing with this, like, almost realization that he's on the wrong side in a way. And in certain ways, and kind of just grown to love these people. And
yeah, it's like he's gone too deep, and he's just started to like the people that he's paying attention to, and he's hearing them make statements about stuff, and then realizing things. I think most of his sort of, I think it's completely justified, just because like most of his turn comes from him observing his superior, Grubitz.
Yeah.
It's the fact that that guy is above him and he's climbing the ladder. And then I think it's once he realizes that the only reason they're investigating them at all is because the culture minister wants the writer's girlfriend.
Yeah.
I think that's where he's like, he becomes disillusioned. That's when it all just sort of like begins. His disillusionment starts to like just completely take him over. It's just like, I'm doing this not for the party. It's not for communism. It's not for the state.
Yeah.
It's for this fat, greedy scumbag to get his hand away.
And there's a great...
That's disgusting, and he's disgusted by this man. Yeah. And then he's just like... And he's just like, I'm not a tool of the state. I'm a tool of this guy.
Because he starts... Yeah. He keeps getting told by his friend Grubitz to... Well, supposed friend. To, take those parts out of his reports. Like, anytime the minister's there, take that out of the report. And it's really, I don't know, like, I'm gonna just put like a minor spoiler down now, because there's certain elements of this movie you can't really talk about until you go into a bit more depth. But because like the whole thing where he kind of warns Laszlo about, he kind of rings the bell so that he goes down and observes. Yeah,
he does all these subtle things to like try and manipulate them.
Yeah.
He's the observer.
Like, I don't know. For me, at that stage in his character, it seemed like almost he wanted it to, like, almost create some antagonism between him and Christa Maria.
Yeah.
And it kind of backfires in a way that, you know, Laszlo becomes more really tender to her, because he realizes she's not doing this out of choice. This is, and he's really nice. And that seems to be when Wessler kind of changes his attitude a lot.
It's the realization of, oh, he really loves her, and she loves him, and she's not having an affair in the traditional sense. No. She's being manipulated and bullied by someone in authority.
Yeah.
The same person who's manipulating and bullying him.
Yeah.
And that sort of creates this connection, and it's like, it's just, it's so well, like, the way the narrative plays out from then on is so perfectly executed.
Yeah.
I think this is a wonderful... I think it's beautifully shot. I think it captures the tone of the era perfectly. Not that I was around in, like, East Germany at this stage. I mean, I was probably about 2 years old at the time this is set. I think this is set in, like... I think the first...
No, it's actually set in 1984.
It's 84, we were born.
Yeah, we were born this year.
Yeah, so it's like, I'm not going to claim that, like, I know, I remember what it was like. But in other depictions of it that I've seen, it seems like they've really nailed what it was like. And having been to East Germany, you still see a lot of, like, you can see a lot of it in the architecture and stuff like that, of, like, it's very Soviet still. Well, I say still, like, the last time I was there was, like, 2008, maybe. Oh, my God, that was 14 years ago. Oh my God, that was so long ago. Oh wow, that's a long time. Well, that was the last time I was in East Germany anyway. I stayed in East Germany and East Berlin, rather, specifically. And you can see it there. Like, you can see the contrast between one side of Berlin and the other, and the shape of the buildings even.
Yeah.
And it's very like big blocks, you know, and like, even like you look at the cars, like the wee Soviet cars they're driving around and stuff, and they're kind of like little shit putt-putt machines, you know, and all that stuff's great. And they nail, like, just the atmosphere is so tense at times, but then it can flip from tense to being just like really like highly emotional. And
yeah,
it's just, and I'm just going to say,
the performances in it are flawless. I think everyone's fantastic in this movie.
Everyone's fantastic, and it's so sad when sad things happen, and it's so tense when tense things happen. And I'm going to just say straight up, the end of this movie, the very end of this movie. No spoilers for anything that happens in this movie. But I was crying at the end of this film.
You have to be. You would have to be fairly strong not to, because
right at the end, this film, the thing that happens right at the end of the film, floored me.
There's a lot of good payoffs. I find that, like, there's a lot of, you know, we talked before about whenever things aren't done subtly with laying the groundwork, it kind of comes off really bad. But in this, like, everything's like, all these like wee puzzle pieces are laid out perfectly well. Like the score that that George's friend gives him,
Sonata for a Good Man.
Yeah, and like that comes into play. The kind of younger guy who makes the joke that we mentioned appears later at the very end.
Yeah.
So you know his fate. You know what happened to him in a way. Just like loads of wee small things like this, kind of
the threads all come together.
So
in a
like,
nice way.
And nothing's like really overstated. Like, in fact, I find so much of this movie works because of the subtlety. Like the acting, especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, the actor who plays Wessler, the Ulrich Mayr. Mm-hmm. I probably butchered that name, so I'm sorry, but he has this amazing way of just like a twitch in the eye, or like there's a scene where, again, I'm going to just put a spoiler down again because I really want to mention this, the scene where he is interrogating the girlfriend, Christa Marie, and he's kind of hoping she stays strong, but when she breaks, there is a moment on his face that you can just see he doesn't know what to do. He's disappointed. Mm-hmm. And so sad. And you're like, oh my God. Like and that she's brilliant as well. Like, you know, she's in probably the worst spot of anyone. Like, you know, she's the one who this minister's lusting after, and she's a drug problem, and she's very insecure about her acting, and there's just so many. There's so many good scenes. Oh.
Yeah, you couldn't talk about them all, but I would just say, like, to sum it up, I think this film is... I don't want to necessarily use the term emotional roller coaster, but it is one.
It is, yeah.
It's up and down. It takes you, like, it's miserable, and then it's kind of like, it's funny, you know? Sometimes it's very, very funny.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when you see the things, what's happening, and then you see what he's typing in his report.
Yes.
It's very, 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 very funny. Like, there's a bit where it's like, presumably they have intercourse.
Yes.
That's just really funny.
Yeah, because it would cut as well. Like, they're getting all hot and heavy, and then it just cuts to him typing. Like,
typing goes, presumably they have intercourse.
And then his,
okay.
And then his helper guy, Udo's all like, oh, they're at it already. Oh, these artist types, you know.
He's one of the aforementioned Norberts
who
he works with. It's all good stuff. So I think this film is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's a very understated spy thriller.
Yeah.
But it is, in every sense of the word, a spy thriller.
Yeah.
Well, John, we've been disavowed.
Ooh.
I know. They think we're the moles.
That's when the real mission begins.
That's when the real mission begins. It's this situation that we're in is really impossible. I'm really reaching that.
Yeah.
I'm really reaching
that was
that.
Bad.
Yeah. But we need to clear our names and prove who the mole really is.
Yep. Just like Ethan Hunt or
Yes, that's
I'd almost said Hawk.
No, I've done that many times, John, over the last while, thinking about this movie and being like, Ethan Hunt, yes, that guy. So yeah, we watched Mission Impossible, directed by Brian De Palma from 1996. So let's just go over the wee log line for that one. An American agent, under false suspicion of disloyalty, must discover and expose the real spy without the help of the organization. Which is our exact scenario, John. How convenient for us, eh? So, John...
Does that mean it automatically wins, then? We don't even need to watch Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
No, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
I think that would be premature,
yeah.
John, let's say. So, John, what did you think of Mission Impossible?
I love this movie as well.
I think it's great. I think it's great. I'm doing a step all over here, but it's really, really... I was so thrilled the whole time I was watching this film. I was like, fuck, this really holds up.
Yeah. I mean, it really does. It has moments which I kind of... I always seem to forget about, like, the negative parts of this movie, because the rest is done so well.
Uh-huh.
That it, because there's like a few like weird, I would almost call them Mr. Bean parts, where like there's the guy that like the very famous scene where he like drops down into the ridiculously secure computer area.
The comically secure area that they're breaking into, where it has been pastiched and satired in every goofball comedy that has come out since 1996.
Yeah, like if you don't know what we're talking about, I do not know. You must. Yeah, it's like you must live on Mars or something.
Yeah.
But there's like a whole thing where they drug him so he's... having to run to the toilet, and there's like just weird wee moments like that that don't really fit in, and there's like the train conductor near the end who like mugs for the camera, and you're like, it's fucking, this is weird.
This is a John Schneider, I think. He is a guy who, I remember the first time I saw this film back in 1996, I recognized him.
Yeah, he was in a lot of Brass Eye and
he's in a lot. He was
like,
the
Day to Day and things like that.
If anybody knows who Armando Iannucci is, fantastic writer and director. Almost every project that is Armando Iannucci related has that guy on it as a writer.
Yeah,
and he's in a lot of stuff. He was in Alan Partridge. He was Tony Hare's director of the BBC's director of programming.
Yeah,
in Alan Partridge's fantasies, and so that's distracting. Stuff like that is
weird. It's weird. And like there's a handful, like, because this movie's shot really well. Brian De Palma knows what he's doing, except for like a handful of like cheesy shots. There's one where, again, the guy who gets like drugged, and therefore, you know, he's going to get reprimanded. He is being sent to a radar tower in Alaska or something like this.
Yeah.
And it's like this weird kind of, they're talking about it in the foreground and he's in the background.
And there's like, background,
it's just something
around.
Really like weird and cheesy. Like moments like those really stand out because the rest is done so incredibly well. But again, it's the stuff that I always forget about. Like, if you ask me in a year's time, I'll go, oh, that movie's brilliant. And
that's belter, mate. That movie's class. The whole time I was, like, from the very beginning, like, I was just sitting there, like, now this is cool spy shit.
Yeah.
That's what this is. This is the definition of cool spy shit. It's like, the whole time I was watching it, I was like, you know what this is like? This is like watching like a James Bond movie, but the central character isn't a smug shite.
Which is weird because Tom Cruise is playing the...
which is weird, but he does it. He's, you know what? There's something, if I can just say something about Tom Cruise, I think he is a fantastic actor.
He is.
His personal life, I don't care to comment on.
No.
But I think he is a brilliant actor. He's been in some great films. He's had some great performances.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In some ludicrous films, you know? Like, Interview with the Vampire is kind of a cheesy mess, but it's a lot of fun because Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and Kirsten Dunst are all, like, really good. And, like, Antonio Banderas is in that. And he's phenomenal. It's, like, it's all these great actors doing really over-the-top performances. And it all works in that film. I know we're not revealing it.
They all seem to understand the role they're in. And I think for the most part, Tom Cruise, he understands the roles that he takes.
Absolutely, And he does a great job in this movie
of
being an angry, I've been betrayed spy guy who's on the run. He's brilliant. I think this film is just, it is the definition of dumb spy, of silly, silly, cool spy shit. Like, and it escalates in a way that is, like, gradual.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't start out with exploding helicopters and in train tunnels, but that's where we end up eventually, and that's great.
I do have issues with the train sequence in a sense that
in a physics kind of sense.
Yeah, in a physics, or? And also like because the whole space of the tunnel seems to be taken up with a helicopter at certain times, and then at other times there's like another
when
train
it's
coming.
Yeah,
it's like
when it's
suddenly
convenient, it can go sideways.
Yeah,
and back and forth.
It's just sometimes it has a lot of room, sometimes it's no room. But yeah, like it's kind of it's weird and it's daft, and it almost doesn't fit in with where this movie begins, but as you say, kind of things gradually kind of become more ridiculous to the point that it's like, my disbelief has been suspended enough that I can accept this now.
Yeah, because if you start off at like that, the whole like embassy spy scene, you're like, oh, cool stuff. If you were to suddenly go from there to, here's the train going through the Channel Tunnel with a helicopter strapped to the back of it with Jean Reno panicking like a madman and everything's exploding, you'd be like, is this the same movie? But it does get there sort of naturally. You know, and all the cool sneaking about stuff is very, very cool. And like, have all this, like, have something I do like, I know it's silly, but I do like the old, like, Indiana Jones style or something that they would do in like Uncharted games eventually of like globe hopping around Europe and stuff and all over the place. I love, and like they do that in like the Bourne Identity movies as well, which is another movie I really like about cool spy shit.
Yeah.
Which is kind of daft, but I really like it.
It's one of those things you kind of have to almost have it in your spy movie to know it's part and parcel of it. It is a bit of a trope. Well, not a bit, it is a complete trope of it. Yeah. Now, but yeah, it's fun. It's why you watch these things, the escapism of like, oh, now he's in the Caribbean.
Yeah, and I haven't been out around Europe in a while, and I'd really like to go back there.
Yeah.
And it was nice to be like, oh, look where they are now. And like, I was like going, I've been there. There's a bit where they were in Prague, and I was like looking and being like, I've been in that square that they're in now. And
you have done a very American thing there of like making Europe sound like it's a couple of streets. I haven't been around Europe in a while.
I know. But you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
You know what I mean. I was recognizing places in the movie and being like, fuck, I remember that was last time I was there. That was great. You know, it was real like, oh, lament, I suppose. But
yeah, there's a lot of style in this movie. Like out of these three movies, this is the most kind of like slick and makes espionage seem cool and kind of awesome. The other two are kind of the grim reality almost.
It's in the same way. It's kind of in the same way that like when Brian De Palma made Scarface, he did kind of make being a drug kingpin seem slick and cool.
Yeah,
now, there is a lot of sort of reality crashing back to reality sort of violence and misery in Scarface as well. There's a good sort of mix in Scarface, but this is all just over the top shiny, sparkly, explodey, sneaky, silly gadgets side of it that it's relentless in that, and it's like, oh, betrayals. Ooh, there's so many different weird, like, little looping round betrayals in it. And you're like, this is fun. And this is happening.
He also does the groundwork, I think, at the start, when the team is kind of gathered and they're being briefed by John Voight's character. There's a wee bit of banter and stuff like that to, like, just show you the connection they have and how you can tell this team has worked together a lot. And even at one point he says to his wife, drive around the area, you know, get an idea of it. And she's like, I've been doing that all, what do you think I've been doing all morning? Because they're all professional. Like,
I knew you were going to tell me to do that, so I've already done it.
And like wee things like that where they didn't have to spend kind of like in Alien, where they don't have to spend a massive amount of time. You know, they do it by a line, like these lines and stuff show you the relationship they have very much like an Alien and gets you connected to them. So even though, and this is early spoiler, but I mean, this is
some
kind
of those characters we don't get to spend a lot of time with. Yeah.
We kind of get a sense of them and who they are and their role in it. And with Ethan Hunt, like having a bit of banter with like the computer guy and all, like you go, all right, don't mess this up again like you did in Prague or wherever.
And he's like complaining about the fact that he doesn't get to wear a tux
because
he's sitting in an elevator shaft on his laptop the whole time and moaning about that. What it does a good job of, I think, is if you ever watch the old Mission Impossible TV series, it does a good job of having the setup be the same as one of those episodes.
Even the title sequence seems very TV. I can barely remember.
It's a pretty much a facsimile of the old show. The way they do it is very, very similar. I used to watch tons of that show. They used to show the repeats of it on. It was like during the summer holidays when I was a kid. They would show it.
In the mornings,
and I would be up every morning to watch Mission Impossible. And it was fucking great. Because Leonard Nimoy was in it at one point, which I remember really confused by. Because I was like, that's Spock? Because I never saw him in anything else apart from Star Trek when I was a kid. I remember being like, what's he doing in this?
Yeah.
But like, they really nailed that whole beginning sequence. Is exactly like the start of an episode of Mission Impossible. And like the setup, and even like when they're doing the first initial mission, it's extremely like spot on.
Yeah.
It's spot on. But with, and then in Mission Impossible, something would always go wrong. But in this movie, they have it go wrong to an extreme and it becomes something else at that stage.
Yeah.
But they do such a good job of adapting that TV show into something that ends up being feature-length.
I love the when things start going wrong, they start, Brian De Palma starts utilizing Dutch angles a lot more. And even when he has the meeting with the boss guy who... At that stage, you're kind of like going, oh, it's definitely him, definitely him. that's what you spend most of this movie doing. Is like, oh, he's definitely the mole.
He's the bad guy. Was he the bad guy?
Oh, wait,
he's
she came back. Here. She's definitely the mole. But
No. I thought he was a bad guy, but I think now she's a bad guy. He's a bad guy.
But like, he meets with the boss in that whole like aquarium restaurant place.
And, yeah, that's so cool.
Like
that's
the whole thing so is just cool. It's so stupid, but so great.
Yeah, it's at that turn when you get that shot of his face, and it is like the camera is skewed.
Yeah.
And it's like sort of looking up at him a wee bit. Yeah.
And it's kind of cool because it does, like, when Dutch angles, sometimes Dutch angles are used way too much, and it doesn't make sense. But in those scenes, it works very well as kind of his whole world's kind of coming out from under him, you know, because he's realizing, oh wait, you think I'm the mole? It's like, well, dude, you're the only one that survived this.
Yeah, like you said, it's just you. it's fucking brilliant. I think generally as a whole, this series of films is very good. The second one is a steaming pile of crap.
God, yeah.
It really is. I saw that myself and a friend of ours. We went to a press screening of Mission Impossible 2. I know. We were like, I was so excited because I really loved the first one.
Yeah.
And I remember being just completely crushed.
Yeah.
Sitting in this, I was in the cinema with like a bunch of like journalists who were like there to review it.
Yeah.
You know, and me just being like, oh no. This is like, because it was John Woo directed the second one, and I like some John Woo movies. I think Hard Boiled is one of the best action movies ever made. But Mission Impossible 2 is one of the worst action movies ever made. Because it's like, the plot doesn't justify anything that is happening. And it's just a series, like, Mission Impossible 1 had a really fun, super cool spy plot.
Yeah.
It was breaking into places. It was about like secret files and like, oh no,
outsmarting people. Like, there's a whole. That's why I almost don't like the helicopter part of the end sequence because
it gets away from all that stuff.
And I think that's the lesson they took on that. Well, I do like some of the later films. The third one has Philip Seymour. And it's actually really good. But they get kind of more focused on the spectacle elements of it, and it is. I mean, it becomes basically American James Bond, although, as you kind of mentioned, he's not as arrogant and
he's not nearly as obnoxious as James Bond. Yeah,
but this is my favorite Mission Impossible movie because it has the things that I really like in it. You have the espionage, you have the kind of almost like, because a good spy movie I find is almost like a good murder mystery, and I, you know, where you're. It's all about working out who is the one and who's
who and why.
Yeah,
There's always that. That's the always the interesting thing in movies like this. You're like, okay, who's doing it? But then you go like, well, you know, first before we do that, why would someone do this? Yeah. And that's how you, then you have to try and work backwards from there.
Which is why it's almost ridiculous when John Voight reappears in this movie and has his whole movie cough thing. Do you know the...
Yeah, but I think they almost play that knowingly because he almost immediately figures out what's going on at that stage. Yeah. And you're like, okay, yeah, you're not going to drag this out then because the whole audience knows.
Yeah, it's like, all right.
And that's it. You're like, yeah, well, I know what's... I kind of get what's happening now. And then you realize, like, he's talking to him. He's talking as if he doesn't know, but then you get the little clips of what he's imagining.
Yeah.
And you're like, he's figured it out too. Yeah. Okay, I don't feel insulted now. You're not insulting your audience. Thank you very much for that. That's great. So, yeah, this film is... the very, very definition of cool spy shit.
Yeah.
That's why I like it. I do like the other Mission Impossible films. Well, 3 and 4. I haven't seen the 5th one yet.
I can't remember.
But I remember liking the 3rd and 4th one quite a bit. The 2nd one, as I said, is garbage. It's just a crappy action movie that is just so obsessed with style over substance, which can be fun sometimes, but with Mission Impossible 2, it got so ludicrous. It wasn't even funny how ludicrous it got.
No,
it was just like...
I remember is them jumping off motorcycles to each other to have a punch-up. And it was just like,
that's the point where I realized that it was a bad movie.
And even Impossible 2. Like they have... In this movie, they have the masks that they put on and stuff. But
they look great.
Yeah. Rob Bottin did the special effects. But I think in this, it kind of... they look great, but it also has that element of, like, if you look close enough, you can see that it's a mask. Like, it looks like something that could exist.
It's Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And, like, there's times where, like, he's sitting not saying a word, and it's like, yes, that's how you use the mask. But later, they just, like, everything is solved by masks because they've got the voice simulators and the masks are perfect. And
they
like,
did that in the 3rd one.
They do a lot of it.
It was ludicrous, You're right, but they use it really well. In fact, there's a point in this movie where somebody takes off a mask, and that's the point where I was like, oh yeah, this is the guy that did the effects for The Thing, because look at the way that's stretching when he pulled it off. I was like, that's actually kind of boggin' looking. That looks like someone ripping skin off their face for a second, and then you go, oh, it's a mask. Thank fuck. This film is extremely stylish, and it has exactly the right amount of substance.
Yeah.
The plot is exactly complicated enough where you go... Like, I remember the first time I watched it when it came out. So it was like, 11?
Yeah.
Maybe. And I remember being like, I'm not entirely sure what the thing is that they're trying to steal, but I'm still happy to be along for the ride. I think it maybe took me like the 2nd or 3rd time watching it for me to go, oh, right, that's what it is. Yeah. Okay, I get it now. Whereas this time I was watching it going, well, yeah. God, I was dumb. I was really dumb back then, I guess.
Well, no, I think with all these movies, there is... I mean, they're not the kind of ones that you can fully switch off to. They're not... They're this one is the most popcorn bubblegum movie out of the 3 of them. Mm-hmm. And even it demands a bit of intelligence or or just paying attention because...
Yeah,
things do get a bit complicated, and I like that. I mean, I don't think there's enough movies like that to be honest.
I think that's the beauty of it. It becomes a high octane action movie, but it still doesn't feel like it's talking down.
Yeah, that's the payoff for using your brain.
That's your reward.
There you go.
you worked it out too. Now here's an explosion. Yay! Yeah, but it doesn't feel insulting like a lot of action movies do. It doesn't feel like it's talking down to the audience. And I think that's my favorite thing about this movie is, like, if you have a spy movie that is dumb and is talking down to its audience, then you have a bad spy movie. That's Mission Impossible 2 right there. It's weird that, like, the sequel to this is the perfect example of exactly what
not to do.
Not to do, yeah. Everything that Mission Impossible 1 did right, Mission Impossible 2 does almost deliberately wrong.
Yeah.
And I think it's... I don't want to blame John Woo, because he has done some great films, but it feels like John Woo with Mission Impossible 2 tried to make, instead of making a sequel to Mission Impossible, he wanted to make the atypical John Woo movie. Mm. And it just didn't work. But Mission Impossible, fucking great. Yeah. I love it. I still love it. I thought maybe I was going to not like it this time. I haven't seen it in like maybe 15 years.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed every fucking minute of this very good, silly, dumb, spy, cool spy shit movie. Well, John, welcome to the boardroom.
Ooh.
You will see around us, I have arranged and organized all of the key players, including yourself and me, because who knows who's the mole? Maybe I'm the mole.
And you've used the eggshell cartons and painted them orange.
I have. I've done that to make sure that the sound doesn't come out, because I was told once that that's the best way to soundproof a room.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
You could have just taken the, like, I mean, taking the eggs out of the boxes would have been...
I wasn't sure, because I remember hearing it once.
Yeah.
And it was like, is that because of, like...
do you leave the eggs in?
Is that because of the sound conductive or deadening qualities of, like, the yolk inside the egg or something? So I just sort of crushed them all up against the walls and then taped them on. It's starting to kind of smell a bit in here.
Yeah, we need to work this out very, very soon.
So we should get... probably to it quite quickly. So yeah, we've got all the key players, you know. I would come up with nicknames for them all, but there's too many.
Yeah.
I'm no John Hurt's character.
Control.
Control,
I think he's just called
Control,
yeah.
Don't they? Yeah, I was trying to think of his actual name in it, but doesn't matter. So I'm no Control, but I am Control. But why would I organize a mole hunt if I was the mole, John? You know? Maybe specifically to throw off.
Yeah, seems like a lot of trouble.
Seems like a lot of trouble to go to, but you never know, John, in this spy game that we're in. So, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, let's just go over the blurb, shall we? So, in the bleak days of the Cold War,
yep.
Which I believe is sometime, it seems like in the mid-70s, maybe, I'm not sure. Espionage veteran George Smiley is forced from semi-retirement to uncover a Soviet agent within MI6... who we established were the more secret of the secret, organizations.
Yep. MI5's just your bog standard.
Yes.
We're security.
We're in, whereas MI6 is like intelligence gathering, I guess.
Are we security? Who knows?
Who knows? Well, John.
I'm wearing a hat.
Did you learn that then? Did we learn what the fuck they are when watching Tinker, Sailor, Soldier, Spy? John, what did you think of it? Directed by, Thomas Alfredson, the director of Let the Right One In, by the way, which is one of the best vampire movies ever made. But go on. What did you think of this movie, John?
This movie's great.
It's not one of the best vampire movies ever made, though.
It's
maybe one of the best espionage movies ever made, though.
You know what? Actually, that's one of the problems I have with it, is there's no vampires to be seen.
Yeah, that's a big problem with a lot of movies, John.
You go in and
you start watching a movie, and you get to the end, and you're like... So who was the vampire?
I was sitting there going, should Gary Oldman is playing Dracula again, right?
He's
some guy called George Smiley.
He never put the wig on.
No.
So I was just waiting for that to be like the big reveal. Maybe I even sat through the credits waiting for like an after credit sequence where he like buys a ticket to Transylvania or something.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And then like pervs on Keanu Reeves for a while.
Yeah, or Tom Waits comes to visit him or something to sell him a house and then everything just goes from there, you know, but... It didn't happen.
No.
I was really disappointed.
Instead,
John,
we got this really awesome espionage movie.
Yeah, instead, we got this fantastic...
With a wonderful performance.
This fantastic office-based spy thriller, which is weird to say, but it totally fucking is. I think that's what I like most about this movie, is that it's very... It's so grounded.
Oh, yeah.
It's like... Most, like, I'd say 60 to 70% of the movie takes place in an office environment.
It's the complete antithesis of what Mission Impossible is.
It's the opposite of Mission Impossible, and is weirdly sort of, in another way, the opposite of The Lives of Others, in that it's like, here's what these same people are doing in Britain.
Yeah.
Around this sort of time, the people who have a similar job.
Well, like... Yeah. In The Lives of Others, it's very much about almost this guy discovering people, his humanity, and it's very much about the soul, if I can go that direction. Whereas this is very clinical, very whodunit style, kind of, we need to work this puzzle out, and the characters, as like, these performances are fantastic. Like, Tom Hardy's great, Colin Firth, John Hurt. John Hurt's always great.
John Hurt is one of the most reliable British actors ever. Of just like, well, even if the film's not great, John Hurt's going to be magnificent in it.
Yeah.
So I'll watch it.
Goddamn storyteller for me. Like, he'll always be, I grew up watching that series, The Storyteller, and so I'd have a lot of love for John Hurt.
For me, he's always going to be Kane from Alien. The first, when I hear John Hurt, I think of that, and then I think of The Storyteller. So, like, it's like when you get to, like, spy thrillers in sort of the oeuvre. I mean, we talked about this when we were talking about Mission Impossible, of, like, this over-the-top, tense, everything's blowing up, but sometimes sneaking through vents and but this film is
lots of lasers,
lots of laser beams, laser nets, various contraptions and devices. Now, there are
exploding chewing gum.
I mean, they do engage in sort of technological espionage here and there, and this with, like, listening devices and stuff like that, but it's so just, like, I guess the whole premise is, like, I don't know if it's just the way they put it together, or if it's, like, it's the writing. I mean, the book that it's based on is fantastic. If you want to talk about, like, great spy authors, people always talk about Ian Fleming in the James Bond. And now John le Carré is so much better than Ian Fleming. Ian Fleming was prolific.
Yeah.
Like, Ian Fleming's very prolific.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, John le Carré, it's just a better writer.
And maybe both of them were in MI6, but I know John le Carré was in MI6, so a lot of this.
I think Ian Fleming was 100% makey uppy.
Yeah. It would make sense, because James Bond is just
ludicrous.
Yeah, James Bond's like a superhero type guy who is a bit of a wanker. Alcoholic, misogynistic. Exactly. Asshole.
I mean, we very specifically chose not to do a James Bond film for this, and I think that was wise.
Yeah, I mean, I think it. If we're going to do James Bond, we would just do three James Bond movies, because he's like his own thing at this point.
Yeah, he's a genre unto himself. Whereas, like, something like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is very much like, I mean, you have a lot of, like, there's so many great movies based on John le Carré movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's The Spy Who Came In From the Cold is great. There's another version of this movie that is brilliant as well. I think this one's better.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen that, because the original one was like a BBC, like, made-for-TV production.
The one I'm thinking of is that one that you're talking about. There,
and had Alec Guinness in it.
Yeah, who's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, the cast in this is incredible. I mean, yeah, Gary Oldman's so good as George Smiley, who's just like this. I don't want to call him a nerd, but he kind of is, you know, but they all are.
Is that just
because
he wears glasses?
No, it's because he's into paperwork and, like, you know, looking at stuff like that and being like, you know, he likes poring over the data and, like, you know, he's very that kind of focus.
Tom Hardy's very much not a nerd in it. He's the, like, agent guy. He's the wet works, would you call it?
Yes, absolutely. He's a field agent.
Yes, there we go.
They don't like to use the term. Americans like to use the term the wet works, because they're disgusting, apparently. I mean, Tom Hardy's character, like, he is the field agent. He's not necessarily out to murder people in his thing, although it definitely is a part of his job.
Yeah.
But he's mostly just like to get information. It's all about information gathering. Mm-hmm. Whereas James Bond, it never really felt like that.
No.
James Bond, it was always like they were pretending he was out to get information, and then he would just have sex with every woman and murder some guy who's essentially a comic book supervillain at the end of the thing. You know, whereas this is very methodical. It's very sort of like,
I'm going to block out the sun.
Yeah.
It's very much the James Bond thing, whereas this is,
yeah, there's none of that.
We're going to plant information into the newspaper, The Sun.
Exactly. Exactly, John. That's exactly what this is. Yeah, so it's just, it's hard to say, it's hard to pinpoint just one thing.
Yeah.
That this movie is doing, because it does everything brilliantly.
I will say the set design in this is phenomenal. If I could speak, I would say it, but apparently I can't. Because someone drugged me. No. Yeah. Like every scene just looks like the time period. It's like you went into a time machine and it looks all so great. And the way it shot's fantastic as well.
How it looks. It looks like it was made at the time that it's set.
Yeah.
The film grain, you can almost reach out and touch the film grain.
And it's kind of the only thing that distinguishes it from to be kind of more modern is the actors in it. Because
that's Gary Oldman and that's Kieran Hines and, you know, that's Toby Jones over there. I know who he is. Yeah. And you're like, but this, did they build a time machine and go back to like 1976 or something? What the fuck? Yeah, but it's brilliant. Yeah, it looks phenomenal. It's beautifully shot. The acting is superb.
Across the board. I don't think there's a bad performance in this either. Very much like with The Lives of Others, the performances are so, especially because it doesn't have the kind of bombastic kind of scenes that Mission Impossible has.
Yeah.
It relies so heavily on these performances, and it's great. This is one that I think out of the three of these movies, this is the one you really have to pay attention to the most.
Absolutely.
Because it's like the Maltese Falcon or those like old style noir movies where every piece of information, every wee nuance are like, because you're not being like spoon fed like, oh, this guy flew to Germany, and it's like, oh my god, that's a massive clue. It's like all wee tiny things. It's how you approach a certain clue, and it's like, why did he pick up that letter and stuff? It's all very nuanced, very small wee clues, and it's great.
Yeah, it's like, it's not, they're not just following clues. They're like, they're trying to figure out enough stuff so that they can lay a trap, because they don't even necessarily know who it is.
Yeah,
until their trap gets sprung, you know, they're not sure, and it's very, very, it's so good in that regard. Yeah, it's like Lives of Others relies on an emotional component so much.
Yeah.
Mission Impossible is all about, here's this almost overcomplicated thing we're after that you don't necessarily have to actually understand, because we're going to do a bunch of action-y stuff as well that's going to get you there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have a reveal at the end where we do little flashbacks to stuff and show you where all the twists were.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just like, you just have to kind of go,
wait, what?
And like, they do a lot of good visual stuff with that, where they have all the code names, and there's a point where he goes to Control's old flat and finds all the chess pieces that have the code names of each person and the little photographs of them on it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they do a lot of good stuff with that to get you like, okay, here's where we are now. You get a couple of wee bits of just like almost summarizing, but it's still, there's still a responsibility on you as the viewer to have paid attention.
Yeah.
And to have been like, okay, I know who this guy is, and I know why they suspect each person, and I know the ways in which they've all been acting suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And now I need to figure out whether the ways in which they've been acting suspicious relate to the thing they're investigating, or if it's just because they're suspicious, suspect people. Which is wonderful, because it's like, they're people whose business is to do this kind of stuff, and they are all hiding stuff from each other.
Yeah.
But they're hiding stuff from each other legitimately a lot of the time. So that's how it becomes so difficult to parse. Yes, this person seems like they're hiding something, but of course they are.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, the nuance, it's so subtle, and it's so consistent in its subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you get the whole wrench thrown in the works when Tom Hardy's character shows up.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
is like, hello, I'm here too, and I have all these clues, and I'm muddying the waters. Yeah. Oh, no.
Or can I be trusted? Oh, no.
I'm the mole. I don't know, Batman. So, It's wonderful, and like it looks great. If you do sort of drift off, you're kind of a bit screwed.
You're completely lost, I would say.
By the end of the movie, even when you're told who it is, you might be sitting there going,
what?
Why? Whereas if you pay attention, you are kind of in a position where you're kind of like, oh yeah, I suppose. And then they do a wee bit of sort of explanation as to why at the end. I'm not going to spoil anything, obviously. Yeah. But just in case you're still sitting there going,
I would even say a spoiler for this would be almost hard to do, because I think anyone who hasn't watched this, if you were interested and you jumped in, any spoiler, like if I told you who was the double agent or whatever, or if there even is a double agent, then you probably would forget it by the time you get to that stage, because there's like, that
who
much
did
going
he
on.
Tell me which one did he tell me was actually the guy? I don't know.
There's a lot of information like overload in this that you need to remember. Again, like very much like those old movies that you have to remember the names. You have to like know what the key players are doing. Witchcraft is, because it comes into play quite a lot, and then
it seems really complicated, and then they explain it, and then you're like,
that's it.
I think I know what it is. And then they explain it again. And you go, oh, I get what it is now. Yeah.
And like
they, again, it's that sort of symptom of they don't want to tell each other what they're up to.
Yeah.
So they're not giving each other all the details, and therefore you're not getting all the details.
And especially to know, it's we're very much in George Smiley's shoes. That's Gary Oldman's character. So we can only know as much as he knows, essentially. For the story to work, I think this movie's great. It's just,
it's fantastic. It's gripping.
Yeah,
like in Mission Impossible, they have these scenes of tension, which, you know, doing cool spy shit.
Yeah,
where they're like crawling through vents, and they're like going to like secret places and having little meetings and like ooh. Whereas in this, one of the most tense scenes is Benedict Cumberbatch going to work. It's just him going to work.
Well, his character, not
his. It's not him showing up to a movie set and be like, "I'm Benedict Cumberbatch and I'm in a movie."
Ooh.
No, but it's his character. Like,
am I a wizard?
He's going to work, and like there's this whole fixation on his little attaché case that he's got.
Yeah,
and it's so tense. Like, you look at like something in Mission Impossible with like, I'm dangling on these wires of this sensitive floor and blah blah blah, and it's measuring the temperature, and you're like, whoa, but then you see it's Benedict Cumberbatch just like basically in a library going like looking at things, and then like there's a point that genuinely made me jump where a guy comes around a corner and he jumps and it's just some dude, but like it's so just like, oh my god, and it's so tense because it's so well played, it's really well shot. And it's really well acted. His performance is so good. You can tell that he's shitting bricks the whole time. And that's what makes it tense.
Yeah, Tom Cruise, you can dangle off a cliff, but can you go to that library?
Can you go to the library and not get caught?
Your library card's expired, Mr. Cruise. No!
No, I've been caught. It's okay.
We'll get you a new one. And he jumps out a window.
He jumps out a window with his copy of like Spot Can Run. So it's a really great exercise in a less is more tension building. And I think it does it expertly. I think this director is very, very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned before, like Let the Right One In that he made. That's a tense movie for it shares a lot with it. There's a lot of great stuff in Let the Right One In with like static shots where the camera isn't very mobile, and this film is exactly the same. There is something that I would term an action scene in this movie where people are firing guns and stuff, but in another movie, the camera would be all over the place and it'd be cut. Whereas in this, it's all like completely static.
Yeah.
And it makes it more sort of visceral and real.
Mm-hmm.
I think than an action movie. An action movie wants to create artificial tension.
And that scene you're talking about is basically at the very start, almost. Yeah. It does kind of happen throughout. Yeah, they do twice, revisit it. Yeah. But what I was going to say is that it kind of gets you in to the movie, and like, because you're like, interesting. That's this whole... Yeah. It's kind of what it's all about, is like this mission that really went pear-shaped and people lost their jobs and stuff over. And it's very much involved in the main story. And then after that, it does, like The Lives of Others, it kind of, the pace slows down a bit and it becomes a bit more like, right, and it kind of has to. Like these movies have a lot more kind of going on than... I keep harping on about Mission Impossible, like kind of being the dumber version of these, but it's just kind of.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was really. I don't want to blow our own trumpets here, but I think it was a smart choice for us to pick Mission Impossible because it's dealing with similar subjects in such a completely different way.
It's the Hollywood version of the spy, and it does it well. But
it does. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, this feels so real that if these actors were unknown, like, you could believe it. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's so well done.
It's so hard to find anything. I can't think of like a flaw. I mean, if the flaw would be like, I guess it's not really even a flaw of like, if you stop paying attention, you will get lost.
I could see the argument that it is unnecessarily complicated in certain aspects, where there's certain characters that maybe aren't kind of introduced, or you're given no kind of indication of who they are. So
you get very little on the people he's investigating as people.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's very little, like, Toby Jones and Kieran Hines and Colin Firth aren't necessarily on screen very much.
No.
You get them in, like, the scenes with flashbacks and stuff. I think it handles that stuff really cleverly as well, actually, of, like, him remembering stuff about them.
Yeah.
More than anything. But you don't really get to know them as people very much. There's the one character that played by Mark Strong.
Yes.
Who I think is the most human person in the whole... He's the most, like... He's the one you get to know as a person most throughout the film, and he is important in it, but he's not necessarily one of the people being investigated.
Yeah.
You know, he's not one of like the Tinker Tailor soldier, etc. people that they're talking about. But yeah, so it's just so like paperwork focused in a way. That makes it
sound so boring.
It makes it sound so boring, and it should be, but it isn't.
Yeah.
It's somehow still really tense and interesting and involved. And yeah, like, that does, by virtue of that, it does become a little overcomplicated. But as long as you pay attention, you're probably all right.
I would say so.
But, you know, and it held my attention. It really held my attention for the entire runtime of the film. I thought it was brilliant. I guess to sum up, I don't know, would you say it's like... It's a real great office thriller.
Wow. I can see why you were not involved in the PR for this movie.
Absolutely not. I'm not a marketing guy. It's the words. It's the greatest office thriller ever made. Well, John, I think I know who it is, but I'm not going to tell you.
No, don't spoil the surprise.
I don't want to do spoilers, although this is the spoiler bit. So spoilers from here on, everybody, just to be warned.
Yeah.
For all of these films, I'm going to say, because these films are so eminently spoilable to a degree.
Yeah.
Because they're so deep. A lot of them, even though some of them are a bit silly... but one of them, I mean, is still actually, for such a silly film, it is also still remarkably detail-focused in a way. So, big ol' spoilers, probably, for everything, because we're just going to straight up talk about probably the endings of all three of these films.
Yeah, the endings are very important.
They're very for significant the three of them. For all of them.
Yeah.
So, I'm not the mole, you're not the mole, but am I, but are you, and could you be? But before we figure that out, John... Which of these was the best movie? And I am going to have a lot of trouble with this because I'm not sure I know.
Well, I was thinking quite a lot about this because I kind of knew when I finished them. Yeah. I knew it wouldn't be Mission Impossible, and that's not detracting from it in the sense that, like, It's just I kind of prefer the more grounded, like serious ones. I love Mission Impossible and it's great fun and it, but the kind of once it gets kind of really hyperbolic, it kind of loses me in a way. Like that whole helicopter chase sequence is, I think it's dated quite badly. The rest of the movie hasn't.
Visually?
But visually and just like conceptually because it just, you're watching it just going, this looks ridiculous. Yeah. And like it just, it's when the train goes past on the other side and you're like, how did that squeeze past all of a sudden? Like,
yeah, it's inconsistent in its space.
Yeah,
a lot of films are guilty of that.
I'm going to mention one of the worst films I've ever seen now, which is a shame because I do really like Mission Impossible. I'm sorry to compare you Mission Impossible to the 1998 Godzilla movie. But,
oh God.
One of the many, many problems with the 1998 Godzilla movie is that the relative size of Godzilla keeps changing depending on what they want to happen. So it's like, oh, Godzilla, he's bigger than these buildings, but then somehow he's also able to hide amongst these smaller buildings later, and then he's not quite very big here when he needs to be standing in this stadium, but then he's also bigger than the fucking Brooklyn Bridge, you know?
That's one of his powers.
Well, he can change size.
Yes,
he can.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a bit of a problem. And like sometimes it happens in a lot of action scenes where you go, wait a minute, if you were to really look at them, you'd be like, but how did he get over to that table from there in that amount of time? And it's like, at some point you're like, okay, so now they're in the channel tunnel. And you're like, at one point you're like, it's one track.
Yes, yeah.
And then at another point you're like, no, it's two tracks. So, which is it? Because I know that it's actually more than that in real life. It's an easily researched thing to find out how many tracks are in the channel tunnel.
And it would have made almost more sense, but then I suppose they wanted to look tighter and it's more action-y and
It's for the sake of the tension, but then they're so inconsistent with it from moment to moment that it is a bit silly.
And it just made me think, like, Jean Reno is like sitting with a blue, like a green screen behind him, like pretending that he's trying to control this helicopter. Like, so it kind of took me out of the movie that I'm kind of watching this going, like, what's going through his head at this point?
So where am I in the tunnel?
And like, it's like, just shaking the helicopter controls, like the flight stick, like crazy, like, ooh.
Oh no, it's all going wrong, I suppose.
There's also like silly things in this movie that I love, like the max.com.
It's so stupid. Yeah, you look at the way they use the internet.
Yeah.
Is the most baffling thing in this film. Because, I mean, I was pretty sure. I mean, I don't know if we had the internet in the house in 1996. I think we would maybe have.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it might have been actually a couple of years after this. But even then, I knew that's not how that works. That's not what the Bible.org.
Bible.org. Max.com.
Max.com.
Oh, and he just like that whole wee sequence is again one of those like cheesy ones, but I kind of love it. Like, just the Bible's directly in his eye line. It's like, of course. And you're like, what? Did I miss something here? And it's like,
Job. Well, he does mutter out loud. Job, that's also job, another job, thing that he job. Does a lot. Is he talks out loud to himself about what he's thinking a lot of the time.
But I will say the biggest sin that this movie does, which is why it can't win, is at the end. Uh-huh. Ethan seemingly arrives at the pub. Luther's sitting there in England.
Yeah.
So Ethan arrives.
Yes.
He sits down and drinks the dregs of a pint that's sitting in front of Luther.
Is he just arriving or is he coming back?
The conversation they have is very much like, oh, like we haven't been sitting here for a while, you know, having a chat. It's like,
well, that's this whole film scrap then.
So what do we
John?
Do now? Kind of, you know, so like, but I love that idea that Ethan just comes, just drinks the dregs out of a pint.
Luther's mate who just left, like, had to run. and left the remains of his pint, and he's like, you can have that. And then Luther was like, I'm not fucking drinking that, fuck off. And then he took off, and then Ethan just sits down and necks it, and Luther just sits there and says nothing. Like, okay, I guess that's just this guy's thing.
Guess this just happens.
It's just what he's like. No, I didn't notice that, John, but thanks for ruining Mission Impossible for me.
Movie, yeah. The whole movie's ruined, fuck it.
Yeah, but I do like it, though.
It's a great, fun movie.
It's
got a good balance of, like, because I don't want to say it's, like, completely dumb. Like, it's intelligent enough. There's a lot of, like, moving parts, a lot of things going on that you need, like, it could be hard to follow, but it does get a bit silly towards the latter end. But it's all good crack, and it has one of the best tense action sequences ever, with that, like, their heist kind of scenes.
Breaking into the vault, as it were, is actually the reason it was taken off so much by other things, is that it's a really fucking cool sequence.
Yeah.
It's extremely cool. It's extremely tense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do so much good tension building. There's the whole, like, and they set it up initially when they do one of my favorite dumb cool spy shit things to do, when they're going over a plan and they show you, like, clips of the things happening in the place while they're talking about the stuff that they're going to do.
Proper heist type thing, like Ocean's 11 and all that.
And they do it so well, and, like, they show you, like, the guy, he leaves his little sort of, I don't know what it is, it looks like his fucking Code Red fucking Mountain Dew in a cup on the edge of the table.
It probably is, he's a nerd.
Yeah, and it has the condensation running down it, and you see that happen, and you, like, drip on the floor, and, like, even that's enough to set off the pressure plate. Blah. And they have that, they go through the whole sequence where it's, like, it's already super tense, and he's, like, an inch from the floor, and then you're, like, looking at him, and then you see, like, his sweat is, like, condensing on his glasses, and you get, like, the little thing running past, he's, like, watching it run past his eye on the lens, and you're, like, it's so ridiculous, but it's so effective, and it is class. It's such a great exercise in tension building.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of stuff where it cuts, and then they're fine later. Like, getting out, like, they go through that whole sequence and they go up and then they're back up in the vent, and then it's like, and then we cut to them basically just leaving the building dressed as firemen again, and you're like, okay, I'll let you away with that. I'll let you have that because the last sequence was so good.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, style over. Yeah, because the last image is that knife falling, and then I'm like, oh fuck, that's us, we're fucked up. And, like, it just landed in the table just as the guy opens the door, and it's like, that's too awesome not to have in it. So I forgive you this, like. And then they get into the thing and they put the uniforms back on.
And then they're away and they did it. Yay, they did it and they're away. Hurrah. Yeah, so it's great. I don't know if I would discount it from the running, but...
Yeah.
So then what do you think's better than The Lives of Others or Tinker Tailor?
See, it's a difficult choice for me, and it's one of these kind of weird, like, is it the heart or is it the mind that you're going for to be, you know... Because I do think Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy is the more intellectual choice, in a sense. You know, it's a lot more about, like, almost trying to work out a puzzle or trying to like follow exactly what's going on. Where The Lives of Others, it hits me emotionally so much that I have to pick that one, because it just, as you mentioned, that very end sequence where he buys the book. And the book is called Sonata for a Good Man. And he buys that book, and the guy goes, do you want me to wrap it up? And it's like, no, it's for me. And you just go,
yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, my god, yes it is.
Yeah, it's just that when he reads the dedication, I just fucking I fucking fell to pieces, like, fucking ruined me.
It's such a, like, I think for me that's why I can't pick the other two movies. Like, it has to be that, because that hits me so... That just hits me so much. That scene where he's interrogating the girlfriend is heartbreaking. That, you know, when she runs out and gets knocked down, the reactions... you know,
it's so rough. Yeah.
And even when they meet earlier in the...
it's like in the wee bar.
In the bar, and he says, oh, I'm your audience, and, you know, see, right now, you're lying, and, you know, there's so many scenes in this that are fantastic. Her reaction, like, after she basically... Well, she gets raped by the minister,
yeah.
And she just goes in straight into the shower. Her whole performance in that scene, and then George's performance when he finds out, and she just says, "Just hold me."
Yeah,
like there's all these things that I'm just like spitballing all of them now, because it's just like, yeah, as they're coming to me, and it's just like I spend a lot of that movie, you know, kind of wiping tears from my eyes, and like kind of, you know, just like going, oh my god, and the atmosphere again. I think the production design in all these movies is phenomenal for
absolutely
like each all one is doing something different,
yeah.
But
yep.
They nail it. The acting's great in all of them. The editing, you know, in these movies, like I think in Mission Impossible, as I alluded to before, there was a few like cheesy, a few odd choices, but it works for that movie. Yeah. Like, you know, if it was in The Lives of Others or in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, it would be ludicrous.
Oh, it would be completely out of place, but they have a tone.
Yeah.
That they mostly stick to and intentionally, I was going to say subtly escalate, but they don't really subtly escalate it. They naturally escalate it.
And like honestly, like the more I think about it, the Mission Impossible, like the cheesy ones that I'd mentioned before that seemed out of place, could have been references to the TV series, because I don't remember the TV series perfectly well. You know, I'd like yourself, I watched it as a kid, but it's not something that I can really remember too well.
I remember a lot of it. I watched so much of it.
Yeah.
I watched so much of it. I was like, every morning they showed it, like, there was two episodes of it on every single day.
Yeah.
During the summer holidays when I was like, I don't know, like maybe 9 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just, every morning, I was up watching Mission Impossible. And, like, they really nailed, like, the first 45 minutes of that movie, half an hour, 45 minutes of that film, they really do that perfectly.
Yeah.
They nail how the TV show is, and then break from it whenever there's the twist and the betrayal.
Yeah.
That's where but it's a natural break, and it works really well, I think. And like the tone's really good, and like there is also like Jim Phelps is a character. He's the guy in the original show that John Voight's character is in this. Like he's the only like
through line kind of.
He's the only through line, and he's playing it very well. Anyway, he's like he's very much that character up until he isn't. You know, which is the big deal twist in the film. You know. Like, you know, again, spoilers, but so I think it's edited like an action movie, but it also has that nice heist movie thing going on too, that is just, and it does that so well. When it does it well, it does it really fucking well. So I have a hard time picking between all three of these movies for completely different reasons.
They're being quite similar in the fact that like we can group them together in this ridiculous category that we've created.
Yeah.
They are very, very, very different movies.
Yeah, so I don't know, because I really enjoyed Mission Impossible, like, thoroughly.
Yeah.
I was fucking grinning like a fool from the very beginning, little sequence where they're pulling the job in Kiev, you know? And I was like, oh, this is really cool and daft, and I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And then... And it's just so consistent with that nonsense.
That main theme comes in at... Because we didn't mention even the music. That main theme's fucking great.
Now I know why you want to hate me.
Oh, don't.
Man, Mission Impossible 2 is so bad.
You're intent on dragging us down into Mission Impossible 2 here. But,
it's such a fucking drop-off from the first one.
But the music in this seems to come in at the right times as well. Like, you know, it's used quite well.
I think it's a Danny Elfman did the score, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, he did. I think Danny Elfman did the music, as far as I know. I mean, it's the original theme written by Lalo Schifrin, but I think Danny Elfman did the actual, reworking and the score of the whole film. So, it's a nice sort of play on that theme for the whole film. Much better than Limp Bizkit.
Oh, apparently it was Larry Mullen Jr. and Adam Clayton did the...
The actual reworking of the
reworking
main theme?
Of the theme, yeah. Are they, okay. For anyone who doesn't know, that's the drummer and bass player from U2.
The least obnoxious part of U2.
You can be forgiven if I say those names for you to go, who? It's like, yeah.
The rhythm section from U2, yeah.
But
there you go.
But I think the music in all these movies, again, it's great for what they're doing. Like, very understated in the other two movies. Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy has, from what I remember, actually, and I only watched it last night, was very subtle. Just appropriate for what it is. The Lives of Others, again, very subtle. And especially when the likes of... George plays the piano piece, Sonata for a Good Man. You know, it's very much more impactful then.
Yeah, and, it's affecting. And Mission Impossible is just like, go!
Dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba! In your face!
Yeah!
Yeah! Are you on the edge of your seat? I bet you are. I will say that a wee bit of trivia that I discovered. Sebastian Koch, I think. Again, probably butchered that last Koch. Who plays George Drennan, the writer in The Lives of Others, actually is the one playing the piano, playing that piece.
Oh, okay.
And he learned it over months. He practiced and practiced. So fair play to him, because I think it adds a level of authenticity to
that's
it as well.
Right there. That's good stuff. I like that. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, so I'm still not sure which movie I want to pick. I mean, I love Mission Impossible. I really like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy a lot.
Yeah.
The Lives of Others, but The Lives of Others made me cry, John. And I think that's maybe the thing. I think that's the thing that pushes it over, is that it reached inside me and pulled something out. And it still got it. It took something from me in a way, but it was like a...
Plus, I just even find the outrage that, you know... A lot of the times it's very easy to kind of forget kind of how good we have it in a way. And like to watch a story in which someone is, they're trying to prosecute someone for writing an article about suicide rates is ridiculous. Because at some point that's crazy. What this becomes. It's like, who wrote this article that the West have about suicide rates in the East? And like, you're just sitting there going, that is mental.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's ludicrous. They're policing what's inside people's heads.
Yeah, you know, I know we had mentioned like it made us cry at parts, but there's also as you mentioned earlier, it is a roller coaster of emotion because
absolutely,
you're angry, you're frustrated, gets at parts you're happy because
every now and then it's funny.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's so well done, that's just expertly done.
Like. I love George's mate, who's like all kind of anti-establishment, who even like points out, oh, that's my bodyguard over there. And like you see this guy like hiding behind a tree.
Such a rubbish guy trying to like spy on them. It's so bad. But yeah, so I think The Lives of Others is probably it because of that emotional component. But... I would like to say that this is maybe one of the best weeks I think we've had
for
film quality
is,
across the
definitely.
Board, because Mission Impossible is genuinely a really good spy thriller.
And,
like,
and I think we almost needed Mission Impossible to kind of, you know, alleviate a lot of this, because these other two movies are kind of dark and very oppressive atmospheres that we mentioned.
Absolutely,
Mission Impossible was... kind of a great wee lighthearted one to have.
It is, and it is, and it's lighthearted. It is grim at times, you know, bad things happen to people, and like, again, Tom Cruise is a good actor, and you do get like a sort of a, you know, when everyone from his team dies, he's really fucking upset, and you get to like all of those people. Like, really, they do a really good job of setting all those people up, like you said before in that beginning sequence where you get to know them around the table and they're talking, and you get to know, like, oh, they all know each other and they trust each other, and here's what this person's like. It's kind of like that, as I've so often referenced the opening sort of group scene in Predator, where everybody's getting their one wee line here and there, and you get to know what this person's all about in a really simple way. They do that really well at the beginning. And, like, so you do get emotionally invested in these people who then get immediately murdered. And it is a bit upsetting. You're like, this is why he's upset. And you have, so there is an emotional component to that. but it's mostly just like, this is complicated. Ooh, ooh, twisty, turny, twisty, turny, twisty, turny, explosions. Yeah. And it's all fun. Yeah. And it's all done really well. But The Lives of Others is just like, I'm gonna persuade, we're going to show you someone who is so dedicated to something.
I like to use the term believer, like he believes in the state.
Yeah, you see someone losing their faith in it, and it is in such a believable way. Tinker Tailor is a technically a marvelously executed film. It's very well written. I'm a big fan of Jean Le Carré in general. I think he's one of the best spy writers.
Yeah.
I do have a deep affection for like the Bourne trilogy as well. I think those are fantastic films. Mm-hmm. I never watched the ones they did later, like the Bourne Legacy and the one that was just called Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wasn't really interested in seeing that because I feel like that the Identity, Supremacy and Ultimatum was just a great trilogy.
Yeah, it should have just ended there.
Yeah. So it's those films are like, they feel like they're post Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And that like, they're not doing that as well. They're being way more subtle.
Yeah.
Like, those Bourne movies have those action sequences and stuff like that, but they don't have the great sort of everything's exploding thing anymore, and it's way more subtle, so you can feel sort of like these other two films sort of through that kind of theme going on, and like it's like a nice mix. Like Bond, I'm just not interested in James Bond really at all. I've seen almost every Bond film. I haven't seen a lot of the Daniel Craig ones, to be honest. I just haven't bothered.
And any of the ones I've seen beyond, I really loved Casino Royale.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe because Mads Mikkelsen's in it, you know, the way we've got great. Like a mad hard on over him.
Yeah, we do. But, that's not the way I would have put it, but yeah, okay.
But
I'm not going to say you're wrong.
But no, like I do genuinely think Casino Royale's enjoyable, but the other ones, they lean too heavy and the ridiculous kind of.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Kind of boring, almost, you know, because he just always feels invincible.
Oh, here we go again. He's going to jump across this rooftop and he's going to shoot 15 guys. And then the bad guy's going to be a ludicrous over-the-top supervillain who's going to die.
Going to fail. I think with these three movies, I'm just looking at them actually. Sorry to cut you off there. It was just like, because I just want to say for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, I think if you want kind of I think it's the most realistic depiction of what espionage actually is in a like day to day what these people do. This one feels, and it's from a credible source
in a workplace. The whole place, most of it takes place or in and around their office.
Yeah,
and doing their work.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as we've mentioned before, the writer has hands-on knowledge. He was actually one of these agents. He did this job, so there's authenticity to it. All like as we mentioned, the production design is fantastic. The acting is fantastic. Mm-hmm. All the elements are there, and it's a brilliant whodunit, why whodunit kind of thing. But if you want the emotional distress, let's say, go for The Lives of Others.
The Lives of Others, I gotta pick it. I think. But these other two films were fucking brilliant.
It's about time we had a difficult choice for these, because
the last few months, it's just been like, well, we know which one we're gonna pick, don't we? Whereas I genuinely had a hard time. Like, I could see myself having picked Mission Impossible because it was the most fun I had.
Yeah,
I guess in a way it was the most fun film, but it's so difficult. But The Lives of Others, I think, because it was so emotionally affecting, I'm gonna pick that. But John, which of these movies then helps us root out the betrayers within?
They all succeed in that.
Yeah.
So they're all pretty good at doing that, you know.
Yeah, they're all competent at their jobs.
Yeah.
I feel like Which one we could emulate the best, though?
I mean, probably The Lives of Others, because all you have to do is sit in an attic and listen to them.
Oh, mate, I could do that, because I feel like I would maybe get a bit distracted, though. See, I'd probably be sitting watching movies on my phone.
Yeah, we'd probably be more like his partner, Udo, you know, who's sitting like... Just kind of every time he comes in, he's sleeping or something, and he's always coming in late.
I could do that, though. Okay, we'll just... You know what, John? That's a really good idea. We'll just be that guy, and someone else can root out
someone else who a state believer, let's say.
Let's get someone who believes in all this shit to do all the hard, heavy lifting.
I mean, what we didn't mention, I think we should briefly, I don't want to dwell on it, but I think the three of these movies are very, very adequate for the time period we're living in as well.
Absolutely.
With Russia going mental and stuff like that, they all seem to kind of fit in quite well with what's happening, which I think helped with the, identifying with the stories as well.
Yeah, intentional misinformation is a big component of all three of these films, but Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy especially.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, you're kind of sitting there going, is this just the Russians trying to get them to chase their tail? There's no mole, and it's just, this is just time-wasting.
Yeah, I mean, that is considered at one point.
Yeah.
Of, whether or not there is a mole at all, or whether they're just being messed with by this, I can't remember the name of the Russian spy master that they keep referencing.
There's
a guy they keep bringing up. You know, and he's like, oh, that he met once and he still has his lighter, you know, and it's like, oh, that's so rough.
But I don't want to dwell on it, but I think it bears mentioning.
It's very important. And the fact that, that's one of the most grounded one, it feels very much that's the reality of what's going on. And that's how we get to things like where we are today.
Yeah.
Stupid little games played in back rooms.
By greedy little men.
And greedy little men, John. Horrible, greedy little men.
Yeah.
Fuck them. How about that? Yeah. So anyway, we are on Twitter. We are at 7dayapocalypse. That is at @7dayapocalypse. You can email us on filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. That's filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. Mm-hmm. Being a spy seems pretty easy to me, John.
Yeah.
Really? You just sit in a wee room, for us, just sit in a wee room, write everything down, and act like we don't hate the guys in charge. All right? Okay, so...